Welcome back to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio Around the World, bringing you challenging, stretching, controversial, educational, entertaining programs similar to national public radio and television broadcasts. Call-ins welcomed. 319-256-0500. Access code 550-703, pound key. Just announce your name. This part of the Lillian Caldwell Show is brought to you by Swimming Kangaroo Press. A man would have to be crazy to want to take on a woman with five kids. At least that's what Adria Sinclair thinks when her brother dies unexpectedly, leaving her custody of his five sons. If only she convinced Bruce Hathaway of this. He insists on pursuing her, even though she lets him know quite plainly that romance between them is absolutely out of the question. However, Bryce won't back down, and she finally issues him a tantalizing challenge. She invites him to come and live in her house with her and the boys for 1 week. Bryce accepts the challenge. Will he be able to prove to Adria that a romance between them is possible, or will he find that becoming an instant dad to five young boys is more than he bargained for? Read Love's Challenge by Sandra Quinn, available at www.swimmingkangaroo.com, and find out. Check out the other new romance by Sandra Quinn, Love Under Suspicion. Dive into some good books, The Dreamer's Way, a science fiction novel by Marie Atherton, and The Dead Detective, a mystery novel by Lorraine Robbins. Freeze Foundation is now accepting applications for 2006 and 2007. All artists are welcome to apply. The foundation was established to assist the artist who has talent but lacks the resources to market his or her work. Possible materials the foundation can provide: editing, demo CDs, portfolios, headshots. Connect with industry pros and leaders. Visit http://www.freezefoundation.org or drop an email in the mail to miko@mikomorgan.com. And now, the Lillian Caldwell Show interviews David W. Powell about his book, My Tour in Hell, A Marine's Battle with Combat Drama. Good afternoon, David. How are you doing?
Doing swell, Lillian. Good afternoon to you.
Great. What motivated you to write a book about your military experience?
Two things, basically. First, no one really ever asked me what happened until 30-some years later. And second, and more strongly motivated, was my feeling that my experiences were generationless, and they would be applicable to the understanding of our current returning vets, who I'm sure suffer from traumas.
At what age were you sent to Vietnam?
I was sent older than most. I went in country at the age of 25. My peers were in their 19s and 20s.
When you were inducted, did they give you any kind of training outside of military training? Did they tell you what Vietnam was like in terms of the people or the weather or the culture?
They did not discuss the weather or the culture. Their form of indoctrination for combat in Vietnam was to have us find our way through an improvised Vietnam-style trail where they would have artificial booby traps and fake ambushes and the like. So it was more terrorizing than it was informative.
Were you ever told to use that famous quip, don't shoot until you see the whites of their eyes?
No. They did say, don't fire unless you're fired upon, but visual contact wasn't necessary.
How difficult is it to distinguish between the so-called Viet Cong and then the Vietnamese people and to determine who meant you harm and who did not mean to harm you at all?
That's one of the ironies that I saw in Vietnam. My personal experience was that a Vietnamese citizen could be a farmer in one instance, then when a back was turned, they would become a PC. So other than the fact that mostly men were absent from the field, young Vietnamese, they were nonetheless all around. It was very hard to distinguish between the two.
Were you ever in a position where you had to distinguish between who was an enemy, like a child, and who was not an enemy?
I got to the point very early on that everyone and everything, including my fellow Marines, posed an imminent threat to me. So I was in a hypervigilant state for about 12 months.
How did the war dehumanize you?
It made me distrustful of others. It made me hypervigilant in open spaces. I developed an extreme fear of height, which I still retain. It gave me PTSD, which the Veterans Administrator has rated me at 100% permanently disabled. And just a general distrust of anyone and a complete disdain for people in authority over me.
How did you feel when the people you trusted the most betrayed you the most?
Other than feeling mortally threatened, it disappointed me that anyone would wish me ill or harm instead of respect. They seemed to dislike me, so I became quite aloof and alone much of the time after I returned.
Did many of the soldiers around you exhibit these type of symptoms and behavior?
The symptoms of post-traumatic stress, yes. Everyone was, if they weren't in the tent, they were in a hypervigilant state. We were exposed to weapons fire, to include shoulder-held rockets, AK-47 rifles, booby traps, bungee stakes, children with bombs on them, women with pistols in their rice paddy baskets, just a litany of terror.
How long did it take for you to learn that your government deserted you when you most needed it?
That's a good question. I think it fell on me in boot camp when the military occupational specialties were issued to the boot camp platoon I was in. Only four were designated as infantrymen. I was one of the four. And I felt that my maturity and my business background would have much better served the country and, frankly, myself if I had been doing computer work or some other contributory thing.
So they lumped most of the able-bodied adults into fighters.
Yes, fodder for the war.
Okay. Now, how long, when you came back from Vietnam, how were you treated?
The complete opposite of a patriot. I was scorned. I was threatened by mobs. I was called a murderer, a child killer, no sense of honor was to be given me.
And how did the government treat you?
They discharged the a couple of ways. One is a cruel way. I was in Vietnam for 7 months when I had an opportunity to go on rest and recuperation. I chose to go to Oahu, Hawaii, and meet with my then wife. But it was a mere 17 hours separating me from combat fighting against an organized North Vietnamese army. 17 hours later, trying to embrace my wife as though nothing ever happened. The other way was to have discharged me after my 2-year enlistment and send me out the door in civilian clothes to face life on my own.
Now, please describe to the audience, for them who don't understand, what post-traumatic stress is all about.
Okay. A traumatic experience that is outside of the range of ordinary human experience is classified as a trauma. When that trauma occurs, some things are remembered and other things become obscure to recollection. Left untreated and the incident not fully understood and resolved and filed away in a safe memory bank, continues to re-traumatize, and it develops additional re-stimulators that some don't have anything to do with what actually happened. For instance, being shot at while standing is the trauma. One of the hooks would be being out alone in the dark outside of one's house or car, and then a loud noise of some kind triggers the instant re-experiencing of the trauma, however old it may be. When a sufficient amount of traumatic experiences results in an ability, for instance, to keep and hold the job or be productive and of worth to a company, no longer exists, the sufferer has to turn to government for disability and compensation just to stay afloat in the United States.
Okay, two questions. We'll go real slow and answer them.
Okay.
One, if not diagnosed and treated, what can a person expect this to affect their life?
One thing would be, from my personal experience, the idea that suicide is better than existing this way.
Okay. Explain to the audience how it affects you emotionally in a relationship, whether it's with your wife or your kids or your parents or even another human being.
Again, speaking for myself.
Yes.
I had a subconscious and conscious distrust of others and any behavior that was against me or out of my control triggered not anger or disciplinary activities. Rather, I went into what I would say would be ballistic rage, all reason lost, and not physically explosive, but verbally extremely abusive. And it drove me away from all societal contact, cost me two marriages, the joy of raising four children, and I had 18 jobs in under 10 years just because I couldn't deal with others.
Now, you sought various help and finally found something that put a stop to it. Could you please tell the audience what you have finally used and why it was so effective in your treatment?
I can tell you from my point of view and my experience, the Traumatic Incident Reduction Association, which has a website, was founded in Menlo Park. And in 1988, I was introduced to a facilitator named Gerald French, who was one of the beginning therapists, if you will. And he took it upon himself, gratis or pro bono, to carry me through some of the traumatic incidents that I had experienced. The way it was done was in a completely non-threatening, one-on-one, closed-door session that lasted as long as it needed to last, and then did gently once there had been a positive experience on my part. Did that help you?
Yes. Now, it's not a cure-all for everything.
It is not.
It has its limitations.
It does. And part of the limitation is the skill of the facilitator and the trust and honesty of the viewer or patient. Without that, things go unsaid and unspoken, and true healing can't occur in a dishonest state.
But if it's done with the right person, it will enable someone such as you to go on with their life in a more meaningful manner.
Yes, Lillian. It's a very emotionally unburdening experience. The void filled with relief and happiness. Having said that, it's much easier to move on and forward. It's no longer uncomfortable to read a daily newspaper, to accept criticism, and to grow.
And when you're ready to move on again, you will participate in another session.
I will, and I would solicit that help if some trauma that I haven't worked on surfaces and I recognize it as such rather than just personal poor behavior.
Would you recommend this to other Vietnam vets?
Unequivocally. I would recommend it to Iraqi, Afghanistan, Desert Storm, Grenada, anybody.
Anybody. So what is the website that they can go and read a little more about this?
They can, I think it is TIRA.org. Another way to find it would be to go to Amazon.com and type in the title of my book. That will carry the questioner to the book site and also to Loving Healing Press, which is facilitated by Victor R. Volkman. And there are TIR links to be found there.
Okay. Now, do you have a passage or a paragraph or two you would like to read from your book to give people an idea of some of the destructive power of Vietnam?
Yes, ma'am, and I would like to read that. This is early on in the first chapter of the 12-chapter book, and it's indicative of the way the whole book is written. It begins toward the end of a multi-company operation in South Vietnam that I had been on, and we were returning to our hills. And it reads as follows. The front of the column had just turned inland from the beach. They had come under fire from an ambush along the trail they were taking back to our respective hills. I rushed off to my right, reaching the top of a sand dune that overlooked the point of attack. The VC who attacked us ran from their tree-lined position and retreated down into rice paddies. They were about 300 meters away from my position. There were 50-some men lying side by side along the dune, firing down at the escaping enemy. But I was up there in a world of my own. I waited for an opportunity to sight in on one of the attackers. I aimed slightly ahead of the one I'd picked out and fired. It was a fabulous shot. The VC fell to his knees, and I shot him two more times before he fell off the dike and splashed into the paddy. In quotes, I got one of them. Right where you're standing, to the left of you, I shouted to a man who was chasing the attackers. I was elated. My heart was pounding heavily, and I had a grin on my face that threatened to rip my cheeks apart. I had done my job and maybe saved some lives for our side. The man found the body and drug it back to the inland trail. We resumed our march home again, and I passed by my first kill, lying to the right of the trail. A corpsman from another platoon knelt over the body, trying to see if there was anything he could do to save his life. I saw that one of my bullets had torn through both thighs of the VC. Another bullet had entered the left side of the chest, and the last one slammed into the right buttocks. My victim was slender, pale-skinned, and about 5'5 in height, or length in this case. There was blood everywhere. I was shocked and mortified. That's my hit, Doc, I blurted out. I felt confused when Doc gave me a dirty look. The disdain and hate for me that was filling his eyes said it all. I bent over the body to get a better look. The he I thought I'd shot turned out to be a she. I pretended it didn't matter to me, but it did. I was filled with remorse. I looked down so others wouldn't see the tears that suddenly filled my eyes. My breathing turned into short gasps of air, and my mouth became dry. The water I drank from my canteen didn't help my condition. I fell back in line and resumed the march home. I suddenly thought of myself as a killer, not a soldier. Thank you.
And that's what you brought back with you?
Yes, ma'am.
And you carried it with you for what, 25, 30 years?
up until, easily 35 years.
Okay.
I returned in 1967, and I didn't really get help for 30 years.
And now you're fully 100% disabled, as confirmed, after
yes.
fighting with them to convince them that you indeed suffered a disability during your stint.
It was quite a challenge. They didn't want to believe that they had done anything wrong.
Well, governments never do.
No, ma'am.
So, let us hope that your book and your experiences will help the men and women who are fighting now in Afghanistan and Iraq and from future wars, that they will get the necessary help and cooperation from not only the U.S. government, but from the Veterans Administration itself.
Yes, ma'am, and their families. That's
and their
a part
families.
Of one of my everyday prayers.
Do you have a website?
I do not.
Okay. Can you direct anybody to where they can find your book for when it comes out?
Amazon.com. In quotes, my tour in hell, will be able to answer any questions of that nature. There's also some sample excerpts that I did not read posted on that site.
Okay, great. David, thank you very much. I know how difficult and dramatic it is for you to come on and be interviewed, but I really felt like my listeners should hear what it was like, because so many people can look at the TV or newspaper pictures but not feel the pain, feel the blood, the wounds, or the atrocities and of the monsters people become when war is used as a way for getting even, obtaining territories, or just seizing a nation.
Yes, ma'am, and I thank you for the safe space you've created for this interview.
Well,
very
I wanted
flattered.
To thank you and tell you you're welcome home.
Thank you.
There is a new program going on the air tomorrow, every Sunday, from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., and it's called Thank You, Welcome Home. People are encouraged to call 319-256-0500, access code 550703, pound key. Veterans, people who write military books or have had kin or relatives in any of the wars, including Afghanistan and Iraq, or servicemen and women themselves, to call in, and if they don't want to give their name, don't, but just vent and get it out of your system. There will be other service people there who understand and talk your own language, and they are there to support you in your pain. So
that would be a valuable site.
So if you would like to join them tomorrow, it's going to be moderated by Doug Bergman, another Vietnam vet who has also suffered and has managed to go through his own healing processes. I invite you all to come and partake of this new open forum. It is for you. I know that it should help you. I believe that people who've experienced the same type of trauma to their life are more likely to understand and be more sympathetic and compassionate than those who just read about it. So please join us every Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. on International Voices Radio. If you want to hear this program all over again on the podcast, please go to http://internetvoicesradio, and please check out my sister site, http://passionateinternetvoices.com. This part of the Lillian Caldwell Show was brought to you by WECAI organization. Check it out, http://www.wecai.org, World E-Commerce Network Group for Professional Business Folks. And Marge Tarrant, voted Knit Queen 2003. Please visit her website at http://www.funandcozyknits.com. Knitting just isn't for winter anymore. She's open Monday through Friday and half day on Saturdays to 1 o'clock. Give her a call at 866-353-8159 or drop her a line at funandcozyknits@comcast.net. Please don't go away. At 4 o'clock, Weekend Warriors with Lillian Caldwell and Bill McDonald will be on, where we get to discuss just about a little bit of everything. So if you want to hear more about what it's like to be a Weekend Warrior, or you're interested in writing, you want to talk about your experience, whether it's in Afghanistan, Iraq, or Vietnam, or any of the wars in between, don't be shy. Come on by. Dial 319-256-0500. Access code 550703 pound key. And Dave, should you ever want to come back on and be interviewed or have something to share with the other vets from Vietnam or any of the other wars, please just let me know and I'll be proud to put you on.
I'm very flattered and I will. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And for our listeners, thank you for listening, and we will be back at 4 o'clock. So stick around.